Hey everybody, it is Diaper Perv. I am back on YouTube. I took a little break, and right now we are going to do an AMA, Ask Me Anything, about my time as a pro diaper fantasy facilitator from 2015 to late 2020. So I asked you guys on a few of my different platforms last week to put in your questions about my time as a DFF. I'm just going to call it DFF now. And there were so many questions, so I had to kind of narrow it down to about 29. So I'm going to do half of the questions now in a part one. These are all in random order. And then I will do the other half on a part two video. Right off the bat, I want to say that all opinions are my own. There are a lot of diaper fantasy facilitators out there, and they all have their own limits, their own rules, what they're comfortable with, and I feel like mine were probably more restrictive than a lot of other people's. But I can't really talk about anyone else. I'm only talking about my own perspective and my own experiences. One of the big rules I did have was I was very non-sexual, and that was all over my site. With the questions being asked, it seemed like a lot of people assumed that all my sessions had age play or they were littles, which they were not. About more than 50% of the clients I had were not age players at all and were, you know, considered themselves DLs and not ABs at all. I'm not sure why people thought that only littles, ABs, and age players would seek out sessions. And that's why I use the term diaper fantasy facilitator and not AB mommy at all on my site, because I feel like certain words restrict don't show that a really big segment of the population feel welcome. What are some things that you've been asked to do that you refuse to do? And that was Mupa on FetLife. Oh, okay. I said no to quite a good number of things, and the top thing I would say no to is any type of costume requests or dressing, like requests for me to dress up in a certain way that I felt was not me. So that would mean dressing up sexy, dressing up revealing, anything that revealed my body. I've had requests for like a cheerleader outfit, like me wearing the cheerleader outfit, you wearing it. Yes, I am all about that. But I don't feel comfortable wearing anything that I would not normally wear in my day-to-day life. And that does include things that I guess show off my body in a way that I would not normally wear it. That straight off is a hard limit for me. What else? Anything super duper public, like parading down the strip in full AB regalia on a leash. That's gonna be a no for me. If we're in public and it's very discreet, talking about you being diapered, patting your butt, very discreet checks in the car, or, you know, in a corner of a restaurant under the table. Yes, absolutely. Those are things I would do with my play partners anyway. So next question, how did you deal with difficult clients, if you had any? Did the job ever get overwhelming for you? And that's from YouTube. So I am pretty good at weeding people out when they book initially through email. Like, if their emails had a lot of red flags in them, if it showed that they didn't read my rules and my limits listed on my site, and if they're right off the bat pushing the boundaries or being rude, I am probably going to address that right away in the email. And if they still do that, I'm not going to book with them, period. I do my best to mitigate the risk of having a quote difficult client. And that word itself is is very subjective. Like, what is difficult? To me, difficult means they are there to push my boundaries. They don't respect me. And as I said, I try to weed that out through the emails. If I can tell they're rude, they're pushy, they're mean, they're just not polite and respectful to me as a human person first, I don't book them. So I didn't really have any difficult clients, I guess. For the most part, ABDLs are so respectful and so kind and generous and thankful that I didn't really have to deal with that. Did the job ever get overwhelming? So I never thought of this as a job. So that word is like, oh, okay, it's a job. I don't know. I'm just having fun here. I don't really understand what that word means either, because what does someone do when they feel overwhelmed? I don't know. I don't think I've ever been put in that position in my life where something was too overwhelming. I've been in positions of first aid where there was a lot of emergency situations going on, and I felt like I handled that on a step-by-step basis. I think it is more overwhelming for me to be recording this on YouTube right now because I am so not comfortable in front of a camera that I am panicking right now. but I have been in enough situations in my life where there was a lot of things going on, a lot of things that needed immediate answers, and I really thrive and enjoy those type of situations. It was never overwhelming because I guess being a diaper top is in my DNA, I think. And I never had to overthink the situation because it came naturally. The decisions always come naturally, and it's always on my mind. And even if it was like a more difficult scenario that they wanted, or they wanted a very specific scenario with certain types of verbiage and a script, I enjoy that. It's just about memorizing it, like memory and what steps they wanted next. And that was fun. It was always a challenge. So, number three, best thing about being retired from fantasy facilitating, and that is from Personalius on Twitter. The best thing is that I don't have to deal with time wasters. Yes, there are definitely time wasters, there are people trying to get free stuff from you. I don't have to deal with that. I miss it very much, but I think the best thing is that I can do things on my own time with whomever I want. Not that I wasn't doing those things anyways before I quit, but I have more time that is me and more times to text the cute diaper boys that I am crushing on and not harassing them, but I just have more time to bug them, I guess. I am more appreciative. I'm definitely more appreciative of the times I get to play and see my play partners. Okay, number four, what's the most fun session you've ever had and what made it so fun? Oh, it feels like I'm supposed to pick my favorite kid and put them in some type of order, and that's really tough. I'm trying to think with what the funnest one is, and so many of them have been fun. I think the word fun and gratifying are up there for what is important to me in doing a session. And I think anytime I get to make someone feel great about themselves and reaffirm who they are, and they walk away feeling good about what they like and who they are as a person, is fun for me, because fun and gratifying is the same. I think it's fun when I get to be challenged in a place where I don't have a lot of props. So say in a hotel room. Okay, there is one person that would see me during the conventions, and he wanted to be put back in like a very infantile headspace, under a year headspace. And there isn't a lot of props. In a hotel room, you have what you have around you. And I got to just get creative with what was around, and I could see, I guess, him just being in a whole different space that he had never been in before. And that's fun for me, because I get to be creative. Okay, number 5. Do you feel your perspective on the ABDL kink changed in any significant ways from your session experience? Yeah, that's on Twitter. Yes, I am seriously 1,000% more open-minded, because people kept asking for stuff that I didn't do when I first offered sessions. Like when I first did it, it was very, I guess, vanilla. And then people would ask for anal stuff. And at first I was like, no, because I don't know anything about it. I've never done that. I don't know. And they would ask for pegging, and I would be like, no. I had never dressed anyone in cute sissy clothes or female clothes before this. I feel like I love so many things now because I got to experience them in a very safe way. And I don't know how else I could have gotten that type of experience. And seeing how many people were bi and bi curious within their diaper play has been amazing. Number 6, what was the grossest moment you experienced in a session? That's from Twitter. I mean, nothing's really that gross, like, oh, I'm gonna throw up gross. It wasn't planned, but this guy wanted to mess, and I was like, sure, let's do it. I guess I like to, like, know these things ahead of time so I can mentally prepare a little bit for it, especially if it's with a new person I don't know. So I totally okayed the messing in the nursery. Then he messed. Then there was the cleanup. And I was with him in the cleanup in the bathroom, trying to clean it up. And then, like, a chunk fell and, like, hit the bath mat. And I was like, oh, great. And then another chunk hit the floor. And I'm like, like, I guess it doesn't bother me at all during the cleanup when it's within the diaper or, like, in the tub, but when it's touching something that's like fabric, that smell stays forever. So I'm like, oh, now I have to like really wash everything. And I guess there have been times when you're pegging someone and you pull out and it's a little bit brown, and I guess it's not that gross because you know in the back of your mind, like, there's a chance this could happen. Try to not have it touch anything else. And I think that's the toughest part, is like not touching it, not touching anything else. Because yeah, if it gets on fabric, it sucks. And I guess there's times when I'm like, when my fingers are in someone and I'm massaging the prostate and I can feel, you know, solids in there, but that doesn't really bother me. I don't know, it just doesn't bother me. Okay, next one. Did you ever have a session with a couple and had to diaper both of them? Yes, I have. I have done that twice that I can remember. Like, two different couples that I can remember. And I've also had one session where one was diapered and the other one was a middle. So she wasn't diapered, she was just bratty. Number 8, when facilitating fantasies, how much of it was scripted versus playing it by ear? I don't mean violating consent or not negotiating. How much of a session was a client going, do A, then B, then C, then D, and how much was, here's my checklist, surprise me. That was from Personalius on Twitter. I would say most of it, like probably 90 to 95% was playing it by ear. I would sit them down beforehand and we would have a discussion about what things were important and also what feelings were important. How did you want to feel during the session? But also what acts were important, were on your bucket list. And I would kind of keep it in my head. And I would just do them in a natural fashion. And I would be checking them off in my head, doing them at time appropriate things, you know, like how one thing would lead to another thing. There were a few times where people would print out a story, like their favorite story that they loved, and had a checklist, but that was very few and far between. Most people just wanted to be surprised and let it go with the flow and kind of not know what's going to come up next. Number 9, did you ever have a client or do a scene you regret doing? Having. And that's from Mupa on FetLife. Absolutely yes. I regret saying yes to the clients that pushed my boundaries so far that contributed to my quitting doing sessions. And I didn't know it at the time because you think everything is just fine and you give everyone a chance. And you don't know people's intentions. And maybe they don't know their own intentions too. I'm sure their intentions were not, hey, let's push ourselves into her lives, into her private space, and contribute to me getting really frustrated. And not knowing how to deal with it. Moving forward, I just would know how to have and enforce my own boundaries. And it's not their fault. They did what they did, and it's up to me to be able to make boundaries and see the situation for what it is and be able to say, hey, let's stop. In regards to having a particular scene, I regret, definitely not. I can't think of anything because it's their experience, so I'm just facilitating it. Number 10, did you have anyone try to scam you, waste your time, dox, or stalk you? All of those! And I'm sure it has happened to every facilitator out there. Waste my time? Yes, absolutely. There are people trying to email, trying to get free fantasy, email, whatever that they're doing to their diapers for free. And that is why some people online are like, you need to tribute me before we talk. And that is because they've dealt with the time wasters. Scam me? Yes, absolutely. Even people that had multiple paid Skype sessions with me, there was one person who just was like, oh, I'll pay you afterwards. And I'm like, sure, I trust you because we've Skyped X amount of times before. What did he do afterwards? Not pay me and then ghosted me. Hey, you need to have a deposit because I've been screwed before. I've set aside time, I've gone to the place, and guess what? They ghosted me. So yes, that's why everyone needs to put a deposit down for all the facilitators because that happens, because they've been screwed. Their time has been wasted. And to me, any of that is disrespect, is not respecting the person as a person, not respecting their time. That is not okay. I've also had an in-person session where it was a couple and they stole from me. They actually gave me the cash. I put it down somewhere. And on the way out, they're like, oh, hold on. I have to just, you know, grab something, whatever. And they stole part of the cash from me. And I was nice enough to even drive them back to where they were. So that was an eye-opener. Even if you have a good feeling about people, they're super nice, everything went well in the session, I just learned you can't totally trust anyone. And that sucks. Docs? Yes, I have. I have been doxed by the ABDL community. Ta-da! 3 years ago. That was fun. Who hasn't been doxed? I mean, really, who has not? Stalk me in ABDL? No. Well, I guess the stalking leading up to the doxing, as in getting the information and then presenting it, that is kind of stalking. But in my past lifestyle, where I was lifestyle in a different fetish, those people, they wouldn't stalk me, but their imaginations would get kind of out of control and they would create future fake lives with me. And I guess in their mind they thought it was real and they just had our futures planned out. And I'm like, holy crap, we need to take like 15 steps back because none of this is happening. I'm married. So that's why I put married on all my profiles as diaper perv so that people don't get the wrong idea about me. I am married first. I'm a wife first. So I think that really curbs a lot of people's imaginations about what could be with us because it's really not anything. Number 11. I've heard rumors about lots of people using professionals for things they have a hard time accepting about themselves. A classic is people who want to be seen as tops, who present as a dominant person, but want to explore a submissive side. Are these things like that in our community that are common? And that's from FetLife. Absolutely. I have seen a good number of people in the ABDL community that present as tops only in their profile and towards the ABDL public. And I think that is so special because it means that they trust me with their secret. And I can definitely say there are a good number of people that are subs first or they want a top. They don't get that in their life, so they become the top for others. They don't necessarily get all their needs met because they're always topping. Enter us, where they get to have all their fantasies kind of fulfilled and not have to make the decisions. Hence they're not planning things out too much and have it too scripted because they like the surprise. Number 12, this is how did you determine prices? And that's from Personalius on Twitter. I actually priced myself a decent amount lower than some of the other facilitators. And there are different reasons for that. So when I first started in 2015, I only started on Craigslist, and I think I started with $50 an hour, and I thought that was fair because I didn't have a lot of experience, I was still learning, I didn't want to overcharge, and I think that's always on my mind, like, am I overcharging? I want people to have a good experience, I want to be affordable for all. Of course, I raised my price from $50 to more than that as time went on. And I would cut deals for some people that had seen me since, like, the first days. I wouldn't charge them the same as a new person. I think I just wanted to stay reasonably okay where I felt good about what I was doing, and I didn't feel like people were taking advantage of me. Like my time was compensated for the things I was doing. 13. Has anyone ever chickened out as the session was just starting or in the middle of it? Yes. Oh my goodness. I've had times where I got to the hotel room and they met me at the door and they were so nervous. They were like, "Hey, can I just pay you to leave? Like, I don't think I can do this." And how I would handle that is, "Hey, we're just gonna sit down and we're just gonna chat and we're gonna get to know each other." When we started doing that and we started talking about things that weren't diaper related and then moved to diapers, they're usually in a more relaxed and confident feeling headspace. I often like to ask the question, "What are you nervous about?" and try to narrow that down and pinpoint what it is they're anxious about and then tackle that issue. There have been times where we did all that, I diapered them, and then they freaked out in the middle of it. I don't know what's going on in their mind. I can only speculate, and I'm guessing they feel ashamed of it and they are embarrassed that someone is, I guess, seeing them in a diaper or they're exposing this very vulnerable part of themselves. So when that happens, I'll try to take a step back and not make it about the diapers and just step back and sit down and chat. And if that still doesn't work, then we have to end the session. There are times when people have accidentally come, because I try not to do that in the middle of the session unless I have confirmation and they're feeling very confident that they can either come more than once in the time frame, or they're not going to be put off about diapers afterwards. Because a lot of people are after they come. They're like, okay, they get kicked back into reality and they're like, okay, I need to take this off and I'm done with this for however whatever amount of time they feel is comfortable. So I tried to move the session along strategically, and there are times when they come accidentally, whoops, and then the feelings of embarrassment and shame kick in, and then they're like, okay, you have to go, I'm done. So I just gracefully bow out, I guess. So it's about reading the situation, it's about reading the room. I remember one person was so confident about being dressed up and being in the back seat as we went through a drive-through. And literally, as my car pulled out of the driveway, he said the safe word. And I'm like, what? We're not even near any drive-through yet. The windows are still rolled up. And then when that happens, I will try to find out why they're anxious, what they're worried about, and if we can do things differently in the scene. Like, hey, what if I go through the drive-through and all the windows are up? And you sit in a place where they can't see you. And maybe that will be equally as exhilarating for them, but they're not exposed at all, and it's very safe. It's just the idea of the exposure, but not the actual exposure. So that's how I handle it. Number 14, besides diapering, what are some good ways to get someone into headspace? So for me, what I like to do in the sessions before was I would do, we would talk at first and get to know them, get to know everything they want to experience, how important certain things are, how not important certain things are, and how they want to feel. Then I ask them, like, who do you see me as now? And what kind of scenario would be your ultimate fantasy? And once I get to know that about them, then I'll do this thing where I reset. I'll like leave the room. We'll go to a different room in the house, and I'll kind of go over the scenario like, "Hey, I'm gonna be your stepmom, and I'm coming in, and I'm gonna find that your bed sheets are wet." So then I leave and I come back and I do a reset. So when I come back, I am in my role and they're in my role. And it starts right then and there with the verbiage, with the feeling, with setting the entire scene of what happened. And that all goes into creating headspace and being immersed in the scenario, which is dependent on, I guess, my acting. And when I'm acting, I don't become a different person in a different role. I'm me as a teacher, nurse, mom, whatever, babysitter. I'm just being me as what I would actually say in that scenario. I think that's the key. So it's verbiage, it's how I act towards them, all of it. It's less about using props and more about storytelling and believability. And they have to suspend their disbelief as well. So it's not just a one-way street. You have to play into it when you see a facilitator. And a good facilitator should be able to create an immersive environment, not using things or visuals, but using themselves and their storytelling ability. This is the last question because there's so many questions. There's like 30 questions. So this is number 15. How did you handle the more difficult and scary parts of the facilitator lifestyle? So for me, the difficult parts were time wasters, and I guess tried to curb that in the email. Like if it's obvious they're trying to get free fantasy play over email, don't even respond. I don't respond to rude people, to disrespectful people, to anyone just not nice. And when you have a red flag, you can kind of tell. So I don't ignore the red flag. I didn't have any scary parts. It was all wonderful and fun, honestly. Poop doesn't scare me. Pegging doesn't scare me. I guess people don't scare me. Like stuff like tsunamis scare me or earthquakes. It's stuff that you can't control, but there wasn't anything scary because I did my part to mitigate the risk. Period. Anything that was a red flag, nope. Don't even respond. If you didn't read my rules and you were an a-hole, nope, because that means you're not going to be respectful of me as a human in real life. No. Okay, so there was a time when people that were not ABDL saw my site, saw my advertisements or whatever, and thought, ooh, she does these femdom-y things, so maybe I can get her to do femdom things for her rate, which was a lower rate than other femdoms, without the diapers, because ew, I'm not into diapers. So basically, they just wanted to trick me into doing a femdom session. And they would, be like, okay, can you do the small penis humiliation? Can you do prostate massage? And they I didn't really find out that they were not into diapers until they were in front of me. And that would make me uncomfortable because, number one, I feel tricked. Like, okay, you saw me and you thought you could manipulate me into doing something that you wanted, but I'm not into because I'm not comfortable when diapers are not involved. Unless it's pegging, but that's different. That's in my personal life. I did try it a couple times to see if I could do it, as I said, I was trying to step out of my comfort zone and try something new and be open-minded, right? So there were times when I tried foot fetish, I tried small penis stimulation, and I felt like the whole time I was playing a role that was not me to the core. And there are people who can do that, who can do any role. But even with that, I could not do it. I did try a femdom one, which involved like a kidnapping scene without diapers, and no, I felt objectified. I was so uncomfortable. Apparently, all the people that did those femdom scenes with me liked it so much because my acting was so good that they wanted, you know, to book another session. And I was like, no. I thought about it, so not comfortable. I might have ghosted some people. But that's not my forte. Like it says on my site, must involve diapers. Otherwise, I clam up. I'm very diaper sexual. I'm very asexual, diaper sexual. I am not okay with being like objectified with my body. This is how I dress in sessions. I wear a sweatshirt or a Halloween tank top. That, yeah, sometimes I get, you know, lube on it and it gets ruined, but whatever. But I'm not okay with anywhere where I have to act or they see me as a dominatrix. Absolutely not. Because that's not me. You know, if I wanted to, I probably could have been a dominatrix and made 3 times the amount of money. But to me, it wasn't about the money. It was about my comfort level. And ultimately, I started doing sessions because I wanted to understand what it was like to have kids. And when you have kids, your time is not your own. You owe them your time. And I wanted to know what that felt like, where my decisions were my own. My time wasn't my own. That's what it's really like having kids. There's an obligation, and I wanted to experience that. And I guess part of maybe me quitting was me deciding, you know what, I don't think I ever want kids. Right now, I'm good. So, there's so many different factors that weighed into that. Anyways, oh yeah, another thing. The very few times I did the dominatrixy things that people sourced me out to do, it seemed like a larger percentage of them were trying to it felt like they were trying to force their fantasies onto me, even if I wasn't comfortable with it. And it seemed like they saw me as a fetish dispenser. And I didn't like that at all. So uncomfortable. Didn't do it again. I just stick to diapers. Yeah, if diapers aren't involved, I'm like, that's kind of like a personal ick. Not being judgmental is just not my thing. And I'm not okay with acting like someone else. I'm going to be me. This wraps it up for part one of Ask Me Anything as a former diaper fantasy facilitator. Hope you have a great day and Happy New Year. Stay tuned for part two. Bye.